Turkey, Tokyo, Australia, Germany.
Go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Three minutes past the hour on this, the 11th day of July, 2016. Yeah, right. This is The Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is where we live. We're a couple of minutes late getting started because I was still in the middle of Dr. Bill's upload from this afternoon. You know, he's available on Podbean now, making it that much more easy to educate yourself well beyond what just about anything out there on the radio has to offer vis-a-vis learning about the origins of this country and how it impacts the present of this country, the Virtual Center for the Study of the Constitution and Civic Responsibility with Dr. Bill O'Brien. Check it out, please. If you haven't before, check it out. There are a number of members of the Horn Family Community Congregation who can vouchsafe the idea that you would do well so to do. This is The Horn. Like I said, headonradionetwork.com is where we live. That's where you go if you want to jump into the chat room and be in the good merrymaking company of Anatole, Jugapunch, Liberman, Little Gray, Steve from Georgia, Stan, Trey, Will in Chicago, and, of course, the longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator, Sparky, who, being a third-stage guild navigator, has, in fact, folded space to become this evening man cave. Yes, must be kind of nice in the man cave today. We are also a listener-supported operation. We try to raise $200 per evening, and thanks go out over the course of the weekend to our subscribers, the few. The happy few. We're still trying to get to 100 subscribers. We may yet one of these days. But thanks go out to our longtime, perhaps one of our longest time subscribers, Tony, out in Chico, and to John in Maryland, in Cascadia. To our buddy, my lawn mowing buddy, Dennis in Kentucky. To Ralphs. Hey, Ralphs, thank you very kindly. As well to Jay Cruzen and Don. And Kath. Thank you, Kath. To Randy in Ohio. To Jose. Thank you, Jose. And because of all that, like I said, we try to raise $200 of an evening, and we don't have to do that. We need to raise, this is going to sound a little crazy, we need to raise $300. It would be a higher number were it not for our subscribers. Why? Because there's a distinct possibility, I would even go so far as to say likelihood, and perhaps past that even certainty, that I will not be on the air tomorrow evening. No, I'm not. I'm not taking the Gulfstream 5 out for a jaunt around the continent, or the Maybach out for a jaunt down the rutted mountain roads of West Virginia. No. There is, and this kind of ties in with Moran Monday, this being Moran Monday, the 11th of July, 2016. There is what is euphemistically referred to by the West Virginia Department of Environmental Permitting, Protection. Ho-ho! Yeah, protection. Ah! There's an informal conference tomorrow evening down in the Coal River Valley regarding the desires of the scofflaw bankrupt Alpha Natural Resources to blow the living bejesus out of more acreage that we would like to see remain up on Coal River Mountain. You know, one of the great shames is that, and perhaps part of the reason they get away with it so easily, outlaw outfits like Alpha, is that there is not much in the way of bandwidth down there in terms of wireless or anything like that. But what I hope to do is to go down and set up a video camera and record the thing for posterity. And perhaps then upload it to Facebook. That is one aspect in which I am found severely wanting. I know next to nothing about editing video, and that's something I need to take some time and learn. You know, because time, I got lots of it. But that's the plan for tomorrow evening. It begins at 6 p.m., so that'll mean me getting out of here at about 4. And thus, no program tomorrow evening. And that's why I said we need to raise $300. We need to raise the remaining 100 for this evening and 200 for tomorrow. Okay? Please? 10 at 30, 30 at 10, 1 at 300, 3 at 100, 2 at 150, 4 at 75, 8 at 3750, and after that my head begins to hurt. Thank you very kindly. Thank you very kindly to Randy and PA, loud and clear on iTunes on my Mac. Good, good, good. And Brother Deacon Asa out in the far wilds of Vancouver, Canada, says, loud and clear on my 1936 Lukyanov water integrator differential equation computer. 1936, definitely 1936. Yes, well, that's good to know. So, if you would like to be part of those helping to keep the horn on the air, well, then run over to headonradionetwork.com, click on the tab Contribute, fill out all the fields except the one about where you work and what you do and why you do it. And if you would like to become a subscriber, we welcome subscribers. We yearn for subscribers. Not a long time ago, but a while back, our dear friend Joan in Taliban, Indiana, suggested a campaign, and we're still on it, whereby we would try to get $410 a month subscribers, at which point I'd never have to do fundraising talky talk again, which would be really, really great. It just sucks doing this night after night, but there you go. It seems to be the only way we keep things going. But we do. We welcome subscribers, but even if you don't do that, just get to the next screen. That's where you pick out PayPal, credit cards, that kind of thing. If you prefer to use the United States Postal Service, and some do, then by all means, send checks and money orders made payable to The Horn to The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, BECKLEYWV, 25801, and shoot me an email and let me know it's on the way so I can tell Boss Man Wayne, and that way he can leave his spider-proof gloves in the truck and he won't have to take anything with him except maybe a nice little brace of rebar in case he meets up with a member of the Klan, because you know they got their mailbox there too. Some great morals you got going for you there, United Parcel Service. All right, so hopefully that is out of the way. Oh, hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. Did I do the hi, I'm Bob Kincaid part? I mean, it's in the intro and everything, but still. It is Moran Monday on the horn, and just by way of a little bit of an introduction, I do plan on being down in the Coal River Valley tomorrow, where we will at least make our voices heard in opposition to the bankrupt scofflaw outlaw coal company Alpha Natural Resources blowing up some more of Coal River Mountain, which incidentally sits perilously close to the Brushy Fork impoundment, a great big dirt and rock dam holding back some. It's rated for over 9 billion gallons of toxic waste. Right now it's holding something like 7. Remember, underneath it is all old underground mines that are full of water and collapsing, and it's subject to, well, it ain't gonna last forever. You get the idea. But they want to blow up some more of Coal River Mountain. We would like for them not to. And we have to make a record of why we don't want them to, especially in light of something that happened last week. And that's why I mentioned it on Friday, but gosh, we had so much... No, Steve says, take it easy on the U.S. Postal Service. No, I wasn't. I was not criticizing the U.S. Postal Service, Steve. I like the U.S. Postal Service. I said UPS, the United Parcel Service. They're the ones who have the UPS store that has no moral compunction against doing business with the Klan. Okay? Let's just be clear about that. Now that would not me being get that wouldn't be me getting in trouble, Miss Karen. That would be you getting me in trouble with Miss Karen, and I don't want that to happen either. So anyway, we're going to try to make a record, because last week, and what I was saying is that I had wanted to get to this last week, but we were sort of up to our eyeballs in other issues, most of which we will find our way to be dealing with in Moran Monday, too. But I'd hope to get to it last week, because there was an appellate decision out from the... 4th United States Circuit Court of Appeals in Richmond. Great guys and women, I presume. Fourth Circuit. I'm sure someone loves them. I'm sure maybe they love other people. They just don't happen to give much of a tinker's damn about anybody who has to live with mountaintop removal. How can I say that? Well, there was a challenge filed of a permit granted to blow away some mountain that happened to be, you know, because they all are, in proximity to some human beings who were trying to live their lives. And in the course of presenting the challenge to that permit, we brought forward all of the scientific evidence, the peer-reviewed journal reports, that showed that mountaintop removal is toxic to, you know, human life. Right? Naturally, the West Virginia Department of Environmental Permitting ignored it and said, screw y'all. We work for the coal company. And we took the thing upward. And it wound up in the 4th United States Circuit Court of Appeals. Where three wise souls who do not live with blasting, who do not breathe the toxic dust, who do not attend the funerals, who don't go into the hospital rooms, three wise souls from the 4th United States Circuit Courts of Appeals said, fuck y'all hillbillies. We in Richmond, y'all down there. Too bad for you. Now, ain't it? No, of course, they don't use those kinds of vulgar words. They say it in legal terms. They use legalisms. They use legal vulgarities. In this case, saying that, well, you know, we are absolutely powerless to do anything about you. You poor people, after all, the entirety of the permitting process is vested inside the West Virginia Department of Environmental Permitting, and, well, if they don't want to consider the health and well-being of you people, then they damned well don't have to. Suck it. Okay, they left out the suck it part, too. But that was the summary effect. If the West Virginia Department, if people who live below mountaintop removal operations aren't good enough to be considered by the West Virginia Department of Environmental Permitting, then who is the 4th United States Circuit Court of Appeals to tell the West Virginia Department of Environmental Permitting that they should give a damn about the health and well-being of the people that they allow to be covered in blasting dust that, being tiny particles, blows for miles and miles and miles and miles on end. You can see where I might get the FU part of the decision. See, this is... This is the application of that Kurt Vonnegut quote that I use at the bottom of my emails. You know the one I'm talking about. You may have seen it. I know you've heard it on this program. The one that says, a normal person functioning well on the upper levels of a prosperous, industrialized society can hardly hear his conscience at all. The takeaway from the Fourth Circuit's decision last week would be that it's not that they can hardly hear their conscience at all. They can't hear their conscience at all. Assuming, of course, that they have one. And I, for one, tend to think that that is, in fact, in question. So, in other words, on this Moran Monday, our lead Moran nominees are a three-judge panel of the 4th United States Circuit Court of Appeals sitting comfortably in Richmond, where they will never taste the bitter tang on the backs of their tongues from getting a mouthful of blasting dust, where they... we'll never know what it means to have homes rattled, infants wakened terrified from their sleep. Where they won't have to worry about big fancy words that hillbillies have to learn, like polycyclic aromatic hydrocarbons produced by the incomplete combustion of diesel fuel oil explosives. Where they won't have to worry about fine particulates or PM10 or PM2.5 or even the stuff that EPA doesn't regulate, the ultrafines. You know those ultrafine particulates, the ones that you can't find any substance on Earth that when reduced to an ultrafine particulate isn't toxic to the human system. They won't have to wonder if they were to ever go into the sacrifice zone. They won't. I mean, they're in Richmond. Why would they? They won't ever have to worry whether or not they're breathing any of those tiny, itsy-bitsy, microscopic pieces of jagged glass that go into their lungs and begin tearing and ripping away at a subcellular level so malevolently that impact on one cell can be seen to affect another cell 10 cells away. They don't have to worry about all that. When the heavy rains come, they don't have to worry if the one of 100 or more sludge dams are going to get overtopped, and a 60-foot high tsunami of filth and toxic waste is going to roar across and erase them and their homes as if they had never even been here. They don't have to worry about that. No, because they have wealth privilege. They have the privilege that comes from knowing that they consider these problems in strictly legal and academic terms, where blasts are things talked about on paper and lungs are things described in textbooks, and people are disposable. Gotta love them. The 4th United States Circuit Court of Appeals in Richmond. Our lead nominee this evening for Moran Monday. And see, the problem in letting this continue, well, it's about the jobs, you understand, it's about the jobs, gotta have them jobs. Even though there are precious few jobs that come from mountaintop removal, even though there are more people working at Walmart than working for Mass, or Alpha. Alpha's had their bankruptcy, the bankruptcy court, a different branch of Injustice Incorporated. Has approved their bankruptcy plan, and their bankruptcy plan calls for being able to blow up more Appalachia in order to pay for the Appalachia, in order to pay for reclaiming the Appalachia that they've already blown up, because they really don't have the money. Turns out that the whole idea of reclamation was a huge and disgusting lie the entire time they were doing it. No, we'll clean up. No, you won't. You're a bunch of liars. No, us! Butter wouldn't melt in our mouths. Oh, we're bankrupt. But if you let us blow up some more of your lives, well, then maybe we can clean up the messes we already made. See, wouldn't that be fair? Yeah, but how are you going to clean up? Well, we got to blow up some more after that. But how are you going to clean up? By blowing up some more after that. Well, what happens when you run out of stuff to blow up? Well, we'll be gone, and you'll probably be dead, so it won't really matter. Remember what George W. Bush said about history? Ain't going to matter because we all going to be dead. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right. So that's why I'm going to not be behind the microphone tomorrow. I hope you'll forgive me. And I want to send out thanks right now to Rusty. Thanks, Rusty, very kindly for getting us started this evening. We've only got $250 now to go because Rusty has given Boss Man Wayne something to look forward to at the mailbox. Something, you know, because, you know, those the spiders tend to run away when they put envelopes in the mailbox. And we're working on a plan to get the spiders into the Klan's mailbox. Good idea, huh? But I wanted to get that one particular story out there just because I had a feeling that we will get lost in a whole bunch of other morality before the program can get very far underway. Good crowd. Good crowd gathered in the chat room. We've added some more. Jug of Punch. Jules is there. Sentient Beings there. Hey, Snork. Snork's there. Trey's there. Will in Chicago. And you can, too. All you have to do is pick yourself out a password and a screen name and be reasonably well-behaved, and you'll be part of the Madcap Merriment, the Zany Multimedia Extravaganza. Yes. Longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Lottie has also joined in, so we got two people keeping watch over their flocks, over the flocks by night. Flock me running. So we had another shooting today. Did you notice? This one up in Michiganistan. Mm-hmm. Three people dead. Two bailiffs. And the shooter himself. But you don't have to worry quite so much about this one. This was just... I don't know. I don't want to diminish it or anything. But this was just good old-fashioned American crime. A guy being taken to an appointment with something resembling justice in Michigan. Well, he apparently didn't want to go. No. Had a court date, he did. There at the Berrien County Courthouse in St. Joseph, Michigan. WZZM 13 reported an unidentified suspect started firing shots at the courthouse around 2:30 p.m. This afternoon. It was under control by 3 p.m., according to police. Brian Dorman, a reporter for ABC News 57, said the shooter was initially in custody being escorted to jail when he went for a deputy's firearm and got it and then started shooting. That's just much more... let's see, what was the phrase that Dim Leader used back during the Reign of Error? Hey, uniquely American. That, I mean, at least nobody was screaming, you know, the South will rise again or anything. Because that's what I've come to expect. Especially after last week. But this was just plain old crime. Plain old gun crime that leaves families shattered, lives destroyed, anguish, heartache. Right. So what else? Oh, plenty. Because there is an abundance of fallout from what happened last week. If you've been paying attention over the weekend, and I do, I can never get completely away from what we do here. I did manage to escape for a little bit yesterday evening. Went for a little walk down the trail, and there's an old narrow gauge rail trail near here. It's a beautiful walk. It runs alongside the narrow gorge of a creek. Several bodies of water join it. And it makes a beautiful, watery orchestra, if you will, of water and rocks, of air and distance. The rhododendrons are blooming right now, and they are the state flower of West Virginia. And some of them, some of the laurel hills, that's a word for a cluster of rhododendrons, by the way, a laurel hill, cling to cliff tops. And you can walk underneath them, and the rhododendron petals, you can watch them fall like slow-moving pink rain. And it's beautiful. So I did. I got away a little bit just to sort of letting everything go. And, you know, for about, maybe an hour. But then, as the punchline to the joke, the old joke goes, coffee breaks over back on your heads. And so it was, and so it is, and so here we are, Moran Monday. And the weekend was full of mean-spirited, clueless white people hooting about what a vicious terrorist organization Black Lives Matter is. Which is, of course, completely 157% not true. But facts don't mean much when it comes to letting loose the flood tide of ethnic hatreds that seem to more and more form a core of what it means for some people to be American. Since the shooting was in Michigan, let's stay in Michigan. A demotion was announced today. Detroit Police Chief James Craig announced it. Because over the weekend, one of his detectives, namely Detective Nathan Weekly, went on his Facebook and created a viral Facebook post. I mean, he created the Facebook post and then it just took off. These things happen. Detroit Detective Nathan Weekly posted the following.
For the first time in my nearly 17 years as a law enforcement officer, I contemplated calling into work in response to the outrageous act perpetrated against my brothers. It seems like the only response that will demonstrate our importance to society as a whole. The only racists here are the piece of shit Black Lives Matter terrorists and their supporters.
Mm-hmm. Now, if we were, I'm not that good at diagramming sentences. Does piece of shit modify both Black Lives Matter's terrorists as well as their supporters? I'm trying to figure out who the pieces of shit are here, according to Detroit Detective Nathan Weekly. P.S. White guy. Well, that's okay, citizen. You may rest easy for Detroit Detective Nathan Weekly, 17-year veteran of the force, has been demoted. Police Chief James Craig said, Detective Weekly has been deappointed down from the ranking of detective to police officer, and he's been reassigned, and we've opened an internal investigation into the matter. Oh, good! What a lovely idea! Put him on the street. Maybe put him in a cruiser where he can pull people over saying that they have a taillight out and then blow them away. You know, if they're the wrong color and everything. Detroit Police Chief James Craig continued and said, it's not about white or black. When you put on this uniform, you can't make statements that contradict what we stand for as a department.
Chief, it kind of is about white or black, and particularly black, since he used the term Black Lives Matter, and the term pieces of shit, and the term terrorists.
Mm-hmm. By the way, just in case you were wondering, former Detective Nathan Weekly has a physical genetic brother on the force. Yeah, it was back in 2010 when Officer Joseph Weekly was on a police raid. And during that raid, He prevented 7-year-old Ayanna Stanley Jones from becoming 8-year-old Ayanna Stanley Jones. He killed her. Now they charged him with manslaughter. But of course the prosecutor went in and probably a little bit of a half-hearted prosecution and the jury couldn't reach a decision. Oopsie. I'm still trying to figure out where this, and maybe you can explain it to me. Because I'm not having just a hell of a lot of luck. I'm trying to figure out where the animus against Black Lives Matter originates. What's its source? I mean, there aren't any pictures of Black Lives Matter activists standing with firearms on the steps of a state house, you know, Capitol building. Black Lives Matter haven't been running around out there calling for the killing of police or of anyone else, as a matter of fact. Black Lives Matter has made it a point to, in fact, call for not killing more people. But to hear terrified right-wing America, and if that was all you heard, you would swear that they were some sort of militant paramilitary, gunned-up gang of killers. I mean, you know, witness Detroit former detective, who will, I'm sure, as soon as the heat is off, be, you know, re-promoted. Nathan Weekly. The only racists here are the piece of shit Black Lives Matter terrorists and their supporters.
See, when people make statements like that, what they're saying is that Black Lives Matter and those of us who think that they are in the right are in fact in the wrong. That people are supposed to simply sit by and watch police summarily execute people of color and say, well, our fine, upstanding, God-fearing, constitution-loving, freedom-protecting police officers would never summarily execute someone unless that person damned well had it coming. So that means in order to buy into the likes of the statements of, say, former and probably sooner than anyone would care to know, returned Detective Nathan Weekly, that, you know, Walter Scott had it coming. That Alton Sterling had it coming. That Philando Castile had it coming. Tamir Rice had it coming. And on and on and on and on and on. I mean, that's where you have to go. That because you are inherently saying that there is something wrong with Black Lives Matter for protesting the disproportionate killing by police of people of color, and in particularly young men of color. This is troublesome to me. Here, for instance, on this More and Monday, the 11th day of July, 2016. Is a panel from CNN's New Day. And among other things, it features former New York Police Department Detective Harry Houck. To say the very least, you will want you'll want your hockey puck. And maybe an extra strip or two of duct tape. Because this guy's not a very he's not very far at all from the guy in Detroit. You would almost say, you know, kinfolk. Strap in. Here we go.
Enforcement disciplines themselves.
Now, these issues that the chief points out, put some meat on the bones of that for us, Mark. Like, what do you think these issues are that need to be addressed?
Well, one, I think, again, is a culture of silence and what we call the blue wall of silence. There has to be a space where officers can come out and speak. But I think first let's take a quick step back and say I think we have to reject the 99% of cops are good argument, not because they're bad, not because it's not true, but because it ignores the fact that there's a systemic problem. It's just like we don't have a problem saying the school system is broken. We don't have to defend it quickly and say, hey, but all the teachers are good.
But might be teachers true. Don't get attacked and killed in response to what seem as the systemic problem. That's why you err on the side of saying, let's not forget this is a good thing we're doing, not a bad thing.
I understand that's a rhetorical move, but I'm saying intellectually we also have to never lose sight of the fact that we're not blaming individual officers. We're talking about a system that's dysfunctional. So how do we switch the system? Part of that is changing the laws. Part of that is creating a mechanism of oversight so that, for example, when a police officer does do something bad, we have a space to not have other police investigate them, but instead we have civilian review boards. If citizen review boards, these sorts of things actually give us the kind of transparency that we need.
How
reasonable so far? I mean, that doesn't sound crazy. That's a very good point he made. We can talk about the fact that our school systems are crumbling, and yet you don't have to jump out and say yeah, but the teachers are good. There's a special, I don't know, paranoid grievance in our police forces, and greater analytical, psychological type minds than we'll have to take a run at that. As far as figuring out where that comes from. Is it because police know how many dodgy things are done in their name that the ones who don't do it have to jump out and say, oh, but not me? Is that it? I don't know.
Is it that if you were on the job and you knew a guy was dirty, you would be worried about coming forward because what if it's not, you know, a clean situation? What if it comes back on you? You know, you need your brothers and sisters within the force to support yourselves.
Well, it's an issue, but when I was in internal affairs, we had this thing that was called the action desk. All right. Believe it or not, I think about over half the calls we got were from other police officers making allegations on police officers doing bad things on the street. But let's see, listen, Chris, this isn't a one-sided argument here, okay? We're talking about three different things here, all about the police department, but facts have got to matter. If we want to make some changes here on what's going on, the police have already recognized the fact that we have some issues that we've got to deal with.
Some issues. That's all it is. It's just, you know, some issues. We've got issues. The police have some issues. And, you know, I thought we came up on Friday in our Friday on the Front Porch discussion. I thought we came up with some pretty incisive thinking on this. You know, it's not just police conduct. It's what enables police misconduct. It's the fact that, and you know, maybe over the weekend you heard the police radio audio. Sean King, I believe, had it. Of the stop of Philando Castile. You heard about that, right? You know, the police radio audio where he said, that subject seems to look a little bit like somebody we may want for a robbery. He's got a broad nose. I'm going to pull him over.
What, Edith, huh?
No, really. Philando Castile, in the grand scheme of things, Philando Castile was killed for his broad nose. You got that? His broad nose. But by the time Officer Friendly gets to the window, sir, did you know you got a tail light out there? It's kind of a long way from broad nose, isn't it? And of course, inherent in the broad nose part is the they all look alike to me part. Jesus. Yeah, so they've got some issues.
Right? Now the black community has got to also understand that they have issues that they have to deal with. All right? This is not a one-way street here. Now, you got police officers, you got the Ferguson effect that we're dealing with today.
The Ferguson effect, you know, the one where I think the Ferguson effect is where cops are afraid to be cops because some cops blow away 18-year-old black kids in the middle of the street and leave their bodies to lay there like rabid dogs in the August heat. The Ferguson, which, by the way, has been proven to be absolute and utter unmitigated garbage. There is no Ferguson effect.
Because police officers are second-guessed right away. We have the incident in Louisiana and in Minneapolis, okay? We don't know what happened there, okay? Especially what happened in Minneapolis, right? The investigation is still going on. But to come out with the rhetoric that the police officers were racist when there's no evidence to indicate.
Yeah, because, you know, he's got a broad nose. How could that possibly be racist?
That racism was involved has got to stop. All right. If that doesn't stop, and this thing about the disparity of blacks and whites in jails, that's got to stop, because I got statistics right here which will prove me right. In New York City alone, okay, blacks are 23%. They make up 75% of all shootings, 70% of all robberies, and 60% of all violent crimes. All right. The whites, only 3%. Now, that is why there were more blacks in jail than there are whites.
But that's okay.
And now let me just finish here and then go. All right. So we look at that statistic. All right. They turn it around. You know, the racial demagogues out there turn it around that the blacks are being picked on. It's not. So the
racial demagogues. Because he's certainly being even handed now, isn't he? Former NYPD detective Harry Houck.
Facts and these statistics, all right, have to be addressed, and you've got to understand them.
But both can be true, right? Both can be true. You wind up dealing with a community more because of socioeconomics and criminality, but the question still remains, Mark, of how you deal with that community.
Right. Can I respond to Harry?
Please.
Okay. So
please, and I'm coming to you, Jeff.
Okay. There's a couple of things there. First, Harry talked about the idea of people immediately second-guessing the police. The police should be second-guessed. They're public servants, and we're the public. We should be second-guessing them, just like we should second-guess our politicians.
He's saying don't automatically infer an assumption of racism. That's what he's saying.
Well, that's not what he said, though. But we have to make that distinction, right? We have to make the distinction.
Right.
Should be subject to scrutiny, but so long as police have not been, and because police have not been, sometimes at this point, police are frustrated when you don't take their word as gospel right away. And with camera phone technology, increased witness technology, we see that they're not.
Well, I mean, you know, and don't forget the body cam technology, you know, when they don't just, you know, fall off right before you kill a guy.
Not always telling the truth. Now, to Terry's second point, which is that in Ferguson, we immediately jumped up and said this is racism without any evidence of racism. We did an investigation of the Ferguson Police Department. I talk about this in my new book. And there is considerable evidence of racism in Ferguson. So it isn't true that there was no evidence of racism. There were racist emails, racist phone calls, racist practices.
He's saying in this specific incident.
No, come on. Let me say
this. There were three emails, I believe, that were racist, correct?
But Harry, there's only 40
emails.
Harry, there's only like 100.
It doesn't matter.
But Harry, hold on.
Yeah, there's only 3 racist emails.
But why are there 3? Why aren't there 0? Why did the detective in Detroit feel the need? Okay, it's obvious he felt that inside. Why did he feel the need to state that publicly? The damn thing went viral, his calling Black Lives Matter activists terrorists. Now, that could very well lead to some other person in this country deciding, because it's happened already, to take some shots at Black Lives Matter, who have a stated vow of nonviolence. You know, there's only 3. You know, as Carol Baker points out, the violence against blacks by the police isn't new. The preponderance of cameras is. Social media is comparatively new. But violence against blacks, it's the historical norm. These guys are full of shit. The Southern Poverty Law Center has been telling us for years that police departments have been infiltrated by white supremacists. Ta-da. And they have. Because it's damn difficult to come up with some sort of screening mechanism whereby you're not saying, oh, by the way, are you in the Klan? Oh, hell no, I just hate Negroes. Well, okay, come on in, here's your badge.
Guys, how are you still on national TV and just said that black people are prone to coming out? I wouldn't be able to respond to that, okay?
Well, they are.
But you think black people are prone
to? Oh, there was the hockey puck moment. He just sat here on national TV and said black people are prone to criminality, to which former New York Police Department Detective Harry Houck said, well, they are. He said that sitting next to a couple of black guys. You want to know the disproof of his assertion? Well, they are the fact that neither of those gentlemen get up and put their hands around his neck and, you know, throttle him. Because that's what someone who is prone to criminality does. Oh, well, oh, that's what you say. Yeah. But they don't. Instead, they yell at each other.
Let me say three emails,
I believe, that were racist, correct?
But Harry, there's only 40 emails. Harry, there's only like 100.
It doesn't matter.
But Harry, hold on.
Guys.
Harry's still on national TV and just said that black people are prone to criminality. I wouldn't be able to respond to that. Okay.
Well, they are.
But you think black people are prone to criminality?
The statistics here show.
You don't mean to say that. I'm gonna give you a chance to correct me. You don't mean that black people are prone to criminality.
What does this say?
I know. I don't know what that says, but I know.
The chief can back me up because he's coming out.
He's not gonna stay on national TV and say black people are prone to criminality.
I am telling you, 75% of all blacks.
I'm hoping you just don't know.
75% of shooters. What you're doing is you're interpreting something else I'm saying.
Harry,
your narrative. That's what you do.
I'm just trying to talk.
Mark, hold on one second.
I think you just don't have
points I'd like to make. First of all, I'm not going to say it's prone to blacks, prone to crime, because I don't believe it, and it's not true. That's the first
thing. It's not true.
The second thing, I have a slight difference.
It is not racist.
To say that black people are prone to criminality.
That's not what I said. I said 75%.
Actually, lying white former New York Police Department detective Harry Houck did say that, because he said, are you saying you're not saying black people are prone to criminality? And he said, because they are. So he did say that. He really, really did say that. You know why he said that? Because he really, really believes that. And when you really, really believe that, the gun comes out of the holster a hell of a lot easier. And Philando Castiles and Alton Sterlings and Tamir Rice's and Walter Scott's die a hell of a lot easier. Because if former New York Police Department Detective Harry Houck is walking around and you know, people think he's just an okay guy, and he's thinking, well, you know, those blacks are prone to criminality. Come on! Math is real. Math is hard, but math is real. Statistics are real. He wants to cite statistics. It is statistically certain that if he believes this, other police officers believe it, too.
City, and by I'm talking about this disproportionate amount of whites and blacks in jail.
Because it is disproportionate.
And this is why. No, it's not.
No,
it is, yeah, by the,
all right, guys,
by the definition.
How about we don't yell?
That's exactly what I'm going to say.
All right. Okay.
Yet, naturally, he gets pressed. And the white guy starts yelling, which is kind of a dead giveaway that he knows he's losing. This is where we are. This is where we live. This is your block, my block. This is your address, my address. This is any town, United States of America. One of the saddest stories, one of the saddest narratives to come out of Dallas is the fact that the Dallas Police Department has apparently been making genuine efforts to not be like that. But that's how it goes in this country, isn't it? Phew. And that's not all. That's not all in the least. There's lots more. She's kind of been grandfathered out of the grandmothered, I guess, out of the running for Moran Monday. But you can't leave out the half-term, half-wit governor of Alaska in all of this. There is apparently a news outlet called Breitbart News, which is, of course, a contradiction in terms. And they apparently have Godzilla from Wasilla on speed dial. You didn't put the hockey puck down, I hope. It was Sunday, on something called Breitbart News Sunday. One may presume it was Sunday, and one may presume it was Breitbart, but the fact that those two things are together, again, eliminates the word news from contention. Oh, just bite down on the hockey puck. We'll be there in a minute. There's some serious white-splaining got to happen. Because, you know, Caribou Barbie Mussolini. Yeah, well, she understands, you know, that whole black experience thingy. It's pure magic, really. And it's going to take me a minute to get this going here. Hold on. We'll be there in a second. Yeah, there she is. All right, let's try this again. Godzilla from Wasilla doesn't want anybody calling Black Lives Matter protesters. Because, you know, to her, they're not. Not sure why. Not sure how she's empowered to make that decision. But I guess maybe we'll find out. Or not. Oh, sometimes the magic works, sometimes it doesn't. Well, the bottom line is, there on Breitbart News Sunday, talking about Black Lives Matter, she said, "They're not protesters. You know, these are thugs. They're rioters. And yeah, I'm calling out the media, saying quit claiming that these rioters are people. They're stomping on a flag, figuratively and literally, shouting death to cops, celebrating violence. They're getting away with it because there aren't enough of them gutsy enough to call out what it actually is. And it's sick. And I think the media is perpetuating a message that really evil people are thriving on right now as they try to warp malleable minds that would believe that one race matters more than another." Which, of course, no one is saying, except for the weird little spirochetes that, as opposed to parakeets, the weird little spirochetes that live inside of Sarah Palin's spongiform mass between her ears that passes for a brain. You know, it's the antithesis, she said, blaxplaining. It's the antithesis, and you'll never convince me that she actually knows what antithesis means. You know, it's the antithesis of Martin Luther King Jr.'s message. It's the antithesis of our Constitution, of the Bill of Rights, our Charters of the Liberty that says all men are created equal. Shut up.
But the question is, how do you counter it? How do you stop it? What ends this? Is the only thing that ends this Black Lives Matter just and all of its millions of members just simply walking back into the House and saying, well, okay, go ahead, kill us, you know, whenever whatever drives you to kill black people does so? Because for the most part, I don't think there are a lot of cops out there who are just saying, oh, look, it's a black person, I can kill them. I think the nature of racism in America is a far, far more pervasive and subtle thing than that. It comes from, it does, it doesn't come from, it, it, it comes from fear. Now the question is, where does the fear come from? So it's 7 minutes past the hour. As noted, we've got $250 in fundraising to go. 10 at 25, 25 at 10, 1 at 250, 2 at 125, etc., etc. And it would be good to do this, to get that taken care of, just so we won't be talking about having $550 or $450, whatever, to raise, you know, come prayer meeting Wednesday. The lines are open if you wish to participate in the program. Unless you are brand new to the program, you probably know what the numbers are. Area code 304-663-HORN is one. That's the stress line. 304-663-4676. 304-574-8178 is the other line. And then, of course, from anywhere on the planet, Skype to Skype, Bob Kincaid Horn, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D-H-O-R-N, Bob Kincaid Horn. And that'll get you right into the program. We got lots more morons, lots and lots, definitely lots of morons, as we make our way through this Moron Monday. For now, though, a little break, and then your call or more filibobster, you pick. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is The Horn.
No secret, my friend. You get get killed just for living in pure American skin.
41 shot. 41 shot. 41 shot. 41 shot.
41 shots. Lena gets her son ready for school. She says, on these streets, child rules. You've got to understand the rules. If an officer stops you, promise me you'll always be polite. And that you'll never ever run away. And promise mama you'll keep your hands inside. Well, is it a gun? Is it a knife? Is it a wallet? This is your life. It ain't no secret.
It ain't no secret.
It ain't no secret. My friend, you get killed just for living in your American skin.
41 shot. 41 shot. 41 shot. 41 shot.
Powerful. 16 minutes past the hour. More on Monday, the 11th day of July, 2016. Bruce Springsteen, American Skin, 41 shots. Thanks, Jason. Thanks very kindly, Jason, helping out with fundraising. $245 to go now. Thank you very kindly indeed. Let's run over to the Stress Line and up Minneapolis way. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, how are you doing?
Good, yep.
All right, can you hear me all right? Bruce was breaking up a little bit.
Oh, sorry. I'll have a chat with Bruce about that.
All right, well, good. I don't know. I just call in for a little bit of therapy. Just too many damn guns. Too many damn guns. Friday, like two blocks from where I first started working at the post office on Penn and Lowry in North Minneapolis, a two-year-old was killed. they probably wanted the driver or whatever, they're guessing, but who knows anyway.
Wait, who killed the two-year-old?
We don't know. We don't know who killed the two-year-old. Police are investigating. But, you know, I guess there wouldn't be much of a show. I guess you could have all the gun violence, and that would be your whole show each and every night.
I don't like for it to be that. There are times that it's felt like that. But the tendency here is to talk about what appears to be on people's minds.
Right. One journalist in our paper there was like a lady that was protesting all the gun violence, over the weekend, and the journalist on the paper said, on the corner, community members stopped to confide to one another their losses to gun violence as casually as some people talk about their shoes. Some talk current events. There was a fatal shooting of a grandmother in May. Politics, faith, or how retaliation for being a snitch would prevent any justice for the latest victim. It's just a bad deal, and I don't know.
Yeah, that's the hard part. You get to that point where you go, I don't know, and I think that's what's deviling this country, isn't it? We don't know.
Did you hear over the weekend the Black Lives Matter protest in St. Paul, and they closed down the interstate, and unfortunately, some of the protesters, the leader of the Black Lives Movement, said that it wasn't people that he knew. Anyway, they were throwing Molotov cocktails at the cops, and apparently,
But the thing is, who are they?
Well, yeah, exactly. Well, that's what the it's exactly what happened in the last year with Martin Luther King, wasn't it? That his peaceful protest ended up not always being peaceful. And one of the cops is like, apparently was hit by a big concrete block and is like paralyzed now or something. I don't know. So, I mean, it's like, violence begets violence. What a surprising deal that is, right?
Right. But I think in our country, we must always take into account the fact that, that in any such situation there are reasons for agents provocateurs to be doing their filthy work. Black Lives Matter has never done anything except officially state that their policy is nonviolence. I'm yet to see any indication that they behave in any other fashion but that. I mean, it's what's his face in Dallas was not Black Lives Matter.
Right.
Turns out he'd even tried to join some of the hardcore black nationalist groups, but they ran a background check on him and found out that he had been dismissed from the military for stealing a woman's underwear.
Wow.
And they said, nope, don't want him. And, you know, there's no way he was Black Lives Matter. And, you know, Sarah Palin talking about, oh, you know, they were rioting. No, they weren't. The only time that peaceful protest became chaotic was after the shooting started. But that doesn't matter if the underlying motive of one's critique is racism in the first place. And you will never, and you know, I don't think you're going to try, and I don't think you, but you're never going to convince me that Sarah Palin isn't a racist. Of course she is. Just like that NYPD detective is. You know, one need not be a member of the Klan. One need not be walking around with one's bedclothes and pillowcase on in order to be a racist. Maybe that's part of the problem we have. Is this idea that there's a set list of things that one has to accomplish in order or be, you know, like some sort of, I don't know, some sort of George Wallace labors of Hercules that one has to do. And, oh, okay, well, okay, he got all seven of them done. Okay, he's a racist now. No, it's stuff that's baked in, that's way down on the DNA level at this point in our country, right?
Absolutely. That's the sad part about the whole thing is where do you even begin, especially now after the Heller decision? It's gotten a hell of a lot harder to even think about how to make it better.
Right. And DC versus Heller is just a nightmare that opened up on that was opened up and dumped out all over America.
I mean, I was just totally even though I knew that the Supreme Court in its, you know, current form was in a bad, bad way, I was just totally shocked that they, when I really didn't think that, you know, they would, you know, throw out the, you know, precedents before that, you know, I don't know, you know, but if you let Scalia write the decision, holy cow, you know.
Yep. Yep. Well, it is very good to have heard from you, and please.
Another thing I just wanted to point out on your survey, a part of your survey about water quality. I guess this has something to do with your mountaintop removal for tomorrow. Your idea that if it's a private company, you're in worse shape about ever getting anything from them than if it's part of a government agency that ruined the water. I can personally attest that in my town, it was the U.S. Army had a munitions plant that screwed up our water, and at least we did get money from the federal government to fix the water. Or at least try to fix the water. It's still screwed up. But I don't know house screwed up. I don't think anybody does. But, you know, I have prostate cancer, and I'm, you know, my neighbor has prostate cancer, and another neighbor has prostate cancer. And I'm, like, thinking, well, I know that I have a genetic link because my mother's brother had prostate cancer, but he didn't develop it for, like, another 10 years older than I was. So I'm thinking, well, environmental factors like drinking the water for 20 years might have had something to do with it. Who knows? But, you know, that's what...
And you know, that's
water makes you think about those things.
Well, that's part of the process of living in a carcinogenic, industrialized, act in haste, repent in leisure culture like we have.
Exactly. That's why I'm thinking my uncle was just luckier to have a few less carcinogenics floating around, probably, and you know that he was able to hold out another 10 years or so before developing the disease, you know.
Yeah, or maybe he had a 10-year jump on the poison.
Yeah. Or that there was less poison for him than there is for me, is what I'm saying.
And you know what? There's more, and this is where it gets frightening. There's more for the next generation and the generation after that because we seem to be showing no sign of either slowing down or wising up.
Right. Well, and with the global warming, there you go. Good luck to them.
Yeah. So long, and thanks for all the fish, right?
Right.
All right, Gary, good to talk to you, man. Have yourself
right,
a good
Bob.
Evening. All right.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye now. Buddy Gary calling from Minneapolis. And look, it's Punky and Scott out in San Diego. Hey, Scott.
Hey, Bob. How you doing?
Good. You?
Oh, pretty good.
How's Punky?
For Monday, he's fine. He's having a nap.
Oh, really?
So, and the cat is looking out the screen door.
You live dangerously. You've got a cat and a bird?
Yeah, yeah. I've had her almost a year, and she's pretty good. She doesn't, she's curious about the bird, but not to the point of actually getting up and doing anything.
Ah.
So, but anyway, all this talk of police and black lives and stuff kind of joggled my memory cells, what few of them I've got left. And I thought back to an incident that happened in my hometown of Alexandria, Virginia, just outside of D.C., on October 21st, 1906.
Wow.
And if you want, I'll tell you.
Wait. That's within your memory? Stop it.
No. But I remember hearing stories about what happened as a child and never could quite make any sense out of it. And a few years ago, one of my nieces got interested in genealogy, and she sent a bunch of clippings from the Washington Post newspaper, but I hadn't thought about what's depicted in the articles until just the last couple of days. What with all of the police stuff and Black Lives Matter. So yeah, my memory's in the sense of I'm not old enough to remember the actual event, but I remember hearing about it, and it was made clear to me by looking at these articles.
Got it. So?
But anyway, October 21st, 1906, Alexandria, Virginia, the circus came to town. Now, my great-great-grandfather was a lieutenant in the Alexandria Police Department. And he deputized his son, who was a bricklayer, to be a special deputy during the circus, to be there and keep an eye on the crowd, that kind of thing. And there was a fight, apparently, between some black dudes, and another policeman intervened, but the guy broke free and pulled a gun out of his pocket, firing wildly. And one of the bullets hit my great-grandfather in the head, killing him instantly, leaving behind a wife and six kids, one of whom was my maternal grandmother. So.
Wow.
Yeah. And it's a sobering thing to think that one of your ancestors was affected by gun violence. And like I say, this is something I hadn't really thought about or concentrated on for quite a while. But all of the things in the news just kind of jogged my memory cells a little bit. And I looked online to see if I could dig up the articles that my niece sent me. But, you know, I would have, growing up technically in the South and having a life-shattering event in my family tree that had racial and police overtones, I guess I would be fully justified in not thinking very kindly of dark-skinned people if I were that type of person, which thankfully I'm not. You know? And, you know, in the late 60s, I was kind of an activist, even as in my mid-teens. And we had a couple of cab companies in town, two of which would not hire black drivers. So I hooked up with an organization, and every Saturday for like a month, we would go down to the major cab stand and picket the Yellow Cab and the Diamond Cab Company until they rethought their position and began to hire black drivers, which they did. This was about 68 or 70, something like that. But it's all kind of jumbled together. I'm kind of rambling here, but, you know, there's no earthly reason why people shouldn't be able to get along no matter who they are. Now, there are a lot of excuses that people give, but they're excuses. They're not really reasons. And, you know, it's just very sad, you know, that we cannot seem to get our wretched act together as individuals and as a country. And now we've got, you know, a presidential election year going on, and one of the candidates, you call him the Mar-a-Lago Mussolini, I call him the demented circus peanut. He was down in Virginia Beach today giving a speech, and he decided to declare himself, you know, never being one to miss out on an opportunity to capitalize on other people's misery. Today, Donald J. Trump has decided to declare himself the law and order candidate for the Republican Party and the future of the free world, so-called.
Well, the Republican candidate is always the law and order candidate, Scott, because, because you know, we're just a bunch of bomb-throwing anarcho-syndicalists over here in the Democratic Party. I mean, golly Moses.
Of course. We're the dreaded L-word. We're the liberals. We're the radicals. We're the no-good, foul-smelling, drug-smoking hippie freaks preaching all that free love and all that freedom stuff. But, you know, so anyway, Donald Trump has, and I predicted this a couple of weeks ago, has predictably pulled a page out of Richard Nixon's 1968 playbook. You know what hell was going on in this country in 68. So Nixon, also never being one to capitalize on other people's misery, decided to declare himself the law and order president. And we see how well that turned out. He gave us the most corrupt, law-breaking administration until Bush and Cheney came along. So,
yeah. I mean, I immediately thought of Richard Nixon when I heard law and order candidate.
Exactly. Exactly. And along the way...
And that was racist code in its own right back then.
Yeah. Have you ever heard that... audio clip of, oh God, what was his name? He had a brain tumor and died. He was a political consultant.
Lee Atwater.
Lee Atwater. Have you ever heard his N-word audio where he talks about, and he doesn't say N-word, he says the actual N-word. And he's telling a reporter or somebody that for a long time you could get away in public with uttering that epithet, but you can't anymore, so they use, like you say, code language. in the 60s, it was all about busing. Okay, but we know what that meant. In the 80s and 90s, it was all about welfare, and we know what that meant, you know.
Sure, and as recently, and it's not recent anymore, but way back a million years ago when I lived in Atlanta, one of the counties, I think it was Cobb, that forms the Metro Atlanta area, absolutely put its foot down and refused to have any of the transit rail lines put down inside its county.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because the good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered Christian white folks there said that now the name of the transit line was Metro Atlanta Rapid Transit Authority, MARTA. But the white folks said, no, no, that stands for Moving Africans Rapidly Through Atlanta.
Yeah.
And yeah. We don't want their kind here.
And if memory serves, that was a big area of Newt Gingrich's congressional district, wasn't it?
Seems like it might have been.
Yeah, yeah. And there's another name from the past currently in the news. He is apparently on the short list of Trump's vice presidential picks, and we'll see how that works. But you heard the, and I forget the guy's name, but I heard it on the news the other day, the same guy who apparently did a piss-poor job of vetting Sarah Palin, who John McCain picked in 2008 for his VP candidate, Sarah Palin, the guy who vetted her, I don't know, he did it with a lick and a prayer, as near as I can tell. But he's now in charge, or is on the committee to vet Trump's nominees for vice president. So, good God Almighty, how's that going to play out?
Oh, Caribou Barbie's just sitting by the phone, don't you reckon?
Oh, I'm sure. She's supposed to be on the new ABC TV version of Match Game in the next week or so that airs on Sunday nights. And I imagine that they will drag out quite a few dumb Dora questions with Sarah on the panel.
Dumb Dora was so dumb.
So dumb. So, good God. What a world.
Yeah, it won't be Dumb Sarah, but oh well.
Dumb Dora was so
well,
dumb.
Well, I could have. That was a little factoid I probably could have done without, but I have no doubt that there will be lots of YouTube outtake clips, and they will be great, great, great balls of fun. That
It's good to see that she's finally landed on something that she is somewhat qualified for.
Well, maybe she can have a long run like Rosemarie had on Hollywood Squares.
Well, and you know who else is on that Match Game panel is Rosie O'Donnell, and the host of it is Alec Baldwin. So if they get out of a taping without a fist fight, I'll be
my
surprised.
God, that's not a game show. That's a wrestling match.
Good God. Where's Haystack Calhoun when we need him?
I'll take Charlie Weaver to block.
All right. Well, anyway, thanks for letting me ramble. I don't know what the point was other than to say, you know, people get your head on straight. You know, there's no earthly
reason. Yeah, but
reason.
The thing is, the problem's not here. I don't think.
Oh, not here with this constituency. But just musing about the general state of things, it astounds me that people can't think anymore as if they ever could. I mean, we as human beings, no matter what our complexion looks like, have way more in common than we do in the way of differences. And instead of black, white, Latino, or other ethnicity, or black, white, Latino, other ethnicity, female, and or, you know, sexually, affectionately different, you know, the real distinction is those who are screwing and those who are being screwed repeatedly. And I'm speaking in terms of economics here. You know, we're not only getting screwed, but there's no flowers, there's no candy, there's no dinner, there's no movie.
No kissing, no reach around.
And no dancing. And it's done without aid of lubrication, and we pay for the goddamn motel room. Now, how's that
and
working?
And leave with
for
bed
you?
Bugs.
Exactly. There you go. As if the indignity weren't enough. But
hey, Punky woke up.
There he is. He hears me ranting. So.
Well, I always like for Punky to get his 2 cents worth in.
Well.
Wait. His 2 seeds worth.
Yeah. But
see what I did there? Yeah.
I don't look forward to this election year at all, what remains of it. The Republicans next week are going to have a Donnybrook in Cleveland.
This week?
Oh, it's next week, wasn't it? No. It's a week from today.
Okay, yeah.
And then the Democrats are 2 weeks from today, I think.
Is it a Monday thing?
Okay. Monday through Thursday of next week and then the following week.
Wowzer.
But the point being, you know, and I've beaten this horse several times. You know, it's down to two candidates, neither of whom, you know, is all that appealing to a lot of people. And you know, it's just very frustrating to
well, it
see
is,
it.
But you know, on the issue on this particular issue, and I know I'll probably get Facebook posts and nasty emails and but the two candidates could not be more diametrically opposed to each other than they are on this issue.
On the police violence.
Police violence, guns.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did the NRA ever figure out what to do about the fellow up in the Minneapolis, St. Paul outskirts?
Not that I've seen. They seem to have been laying low on this one for a while.
Wasn't there a quandary that they found themselves up against in terms of here was someone?
Well, yeah. I mean, if Philando Castile had been white. The white, and I do mean white hot outrage of the NRA would be raising national temperatures.
Yeah, if he were white, he'd be the NRA poster boy for good guy with a gun.
Right, and by the way, good guy with a gun. I don't know if you saw, but the Dallas police chief.
Yeah, I did.
kind of took all the air out of that balloon.
Yeah, it was a thing about it didn't help and had all the potential in the world of making things even worse than they were, as bad as they were.
They asked him about open carry at the event last week, and he said, "We know there was at least one gentleman who was a subject, person of interest, during the demonstration. He had an AR-15 around his shoulder. What does this tell you about people using the new Texas law of open carry at a demonstration like this?" All right, so it's a little different here in Texas in the way we view open carry, concealed carry. We've had a great dialogue with our state legislators about this. We've expressed all of our concerns. We're trying as best we can as law enforcement community to make it work so the citizens can express their Second Amendment rights. But it's increasingly challenging when people have AR-15 slung over and shootings occur in a crowd and they begin running and we don't know if they're the shooter or not, or they begin. It's been the presumption that a good guy with a gun is the best way to resolve some of these things. Well, we don't know who the good guy with the good guy is versus who the bad guy is if everybody starts shooting, and we've expressed that concern as well.
Yeah, and it's, you know, it's not like a football game or a baseball game. There's no guy in the stands selling hot dogs and bad beer and programs. When you're in a demonstration, at first glance, you can't really differentiate who the good guys are and who the bad guys are.
Well, in this particular case, the guy was immediately identified. Oh, look, there's a black guy with a gun. He must be the suspect.
Well, and he was listed as such there for a while.
Because he was a black guy who had a gun.
Exactly.
And people were shooting at cops. So naturally, you know, one and one equals, you know.
And isn't it interesting how the math is not so easy when it's just slightly, when the case is just slightly different? They'll do that 2 + 2 = 4 number in the case of the fully licensed, presumably fully trained black guy, either in a car in the Minneapolis area or a black guy with an AR or an AK down in Dallas, fully licensed, fully
trained. Two words, Scott, two words. Cliven Bundy.
Well, there is that. There is that.
You had good God-fearing, upstanding, Book of Mormon believing, whatever they are, putting crosshairs on the heads of federal agents, you know, representatives of you and me, we the people.
Mm-hmm.
And nothing was done right then and there. There was no loss of life. There wasn't even so much as a glucometer's worth of blood lost. Because white privilege.
Yeah.
And story after story after story, as I detailed last week. White people behaving badly with firearms. They don't die.
Well, the guy with the machete, I think that you talked about, and then the fellow down in Charleston who shot the people in the church.
Or, the guy in North Carolina who was just standing by the road waving a shotgun and taking the occasional pot shot. And the chief of police says, well, our deputy responded appropriately, and fortunately there was no loss of life. That man's black, that man's dead.
Yeah.
I mean, I wish the equation didn't seem so simple. Hey, Scott, I'm going to roll on here, but it's good to hear from you and Punky.
Okay, take care. Have a good rest of your Monday.
I will certainly try. Y'all too. Take care now.
See ya.
Bye now. Our buddy Scott with his boss, Punky. Calling from San Diego. Oh, look, it's our buddy Steve from Georgistan. Hey, Steve.
Bob.
Yeah, there you are.
Hey, how you doing?
Good, you?
I'm doing good, sir, and I appreciate you asking. Can you hear me?
I do.
Okay, good. Friday, when we were in the front porch, you posed a question to me, and you asked, how can a burnt-out taillight lead to a felony conviction? And you already knew the answer to that. I didn't have time to jump in because I didn't want to step on anybody because it was a crowded room and everybody was making great points. So I just kind of took a back seat to everything. But what it does, it gives enforcement a chance to go on a fishing expedition.
Oh, yes.
Do you follow what I'm saying?
Absolutely. In the name of officer safety.
Right. And I don't want to disparage law enforcement. So, I mean, they're a microcosm of everyday society. There's good people and there's bad people in everyday society. And the same could be said for law enforcement.
But you know what? But you know what? That clip earlier, Steve, kind of impressed me. The guy on CNN who said, we can talk about our failing schools, but we don't immediately have to say, but all the teachers aren't bad. There is something about the police that, I mean, we're frightened of them.
Well, and it takes.
And so you have to say, unless you want to be labeled some bomb throwing anarchist, you have to say, oh, but most of the cops are good.
And it takes. Let's just be real about this, Bob. It takes a certain mentality to want to lord over people. I couldn't do it.
And you know what? It's the same mentality to a certain extent. It's the same mentality that attaches to anybody who wants to run for judge.
Exactly.
I mean, that's the ultimate lording it over people. But right. I mean, I don't have any problem. I mean, I have personal experience with incidents where the police have been completely above board, decent, honorable, any good thing you want to say about them. Professional, okay?
Absolutely.
That's not an issue. That is not an issue, and I think we need to stop sort of
we got to stop that, because problems of individuality are not problems, are not systems problems. Do you know what I under, do you know what I mean by that?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, you make a salient point. Yeah, and I agree with what you were saying.
I mean, just by way of a story. Friday night after the program was over, I had to go and pick up Ferg from work, as I do most every night. So I'm toddling. US 19 is a 4-lane highway with, you know, big, in some places it's got big dividing humps of earth, you know, between for a median. It's not an actual median. It's just places that, you know, where they had to carve through the hillside to make the highway.
Sure.
It makes great places for speed traps for police to hide.
And you can see the blast caps where they actually blew out the side of the mountain for you to get through. I understand that.
Right. So I'm southbound on US 19. you know, I've got two lanes southbound. There's two lanes northbound. And I look in the distance and I go, I kind of shake my head and rub my eyes and go, you know, because it's been a long day. I'm tired. You know, it's been an emotional week. You know, maybe I'm just not seeing things quite clearly. I got my glasses on, but still. I'm like, no. That guy really, there was a guy coming toward me going north in the southbound other lane as if it was a 2-lane road.
Oh, my God.
And I'm like, well, gee, I hope he's sober. And, you know, and I start preparing to take evasive action, but, you know, there's, but instead he just drives on past me. I give him like 9 blasts of the horn. And you know what I did? I picked up my phone, I dialed 911, and I dropped a dime on him.
Well, I don't blame you. He could have got somebody killed.
And I got I got dispatch, and I explained where I was, what was going on. And the dispatcher said, "I've got 2 officers on the way right now. Thank you for calling in. The you know, these are horrors in the making."
Right. It's not a.
And so you know what? I want those officers there for that.
Absolutely. It's not a us versus them mentality. I hear exactly what you're saying.
And the next thing I'm about to say, I say as a mark, not of criticism, but of respect. I think better of the idea of community policing than to expect them to go out and be a sort of privateer force generating their own revenue.
Well, unfortunately, that's what we're up against. It seems that's more the exception than the rule as of late.
It absolutely is. There's a little stretch of road, that same highway, US 19. through Fayetteville, West Virginia, and the Fayetteville police use that little chunk of highway as their personal revenue stream. And these are city cops. These are not, and city cops are the least well-trained of, especially small town cops in West Virginia. The next step up is the county sheriffs. They're a little more professional. And then the cream of the crop are the state police. But, you know, they are revenue generators. And
absolutely.
I want a government that doesn't make them have to do that. I want
not necessary.
Because if you're out there looking for Ontario plates to pull over because you know they're easy, they'll just pay the damn ticket because they can't stick around for their court hearing.
In some cases on the spot.
Yeah. Well, that's bad for the reputation of the community. Yep. It's bad for the esprit de corps of the police of the police in general. It contributes to a really confrontational mindset, and it's not what they're supposed to be there for.
No, protect and serve is what it's all about, and that US 19 that you are talking about, it cuts all the way back here into Georgistan, all the way through the Appalachian Mountains.
Oh, yes, it does.
See it? Yes. So you could follow it. I could follow 19, you know, within probably 30 minutes from here and be at your house within 6 or 7 hours if I wanted to take the windy roads to get there.
Right. I've actually done that.
Yeah. It's a lot of fun, but if you're prone to car sickness, it's not something you want to do. But see, here's what happens. Getting back to the burnt out tagline. They will pull you over, and if you got a blood pressure pill and it's not in its proper container, misdemeanor, boom, they got you. If you were the designated driver for last week's Christmas party, and it's some knucklehead left a miniature under your seat, that's, here in Georgiastan, that's an instant DUI. That's serious revenue. So it leads to a fishing expedition.
And why? Because it's good money.
It's revenue. Absolutely, it's revenue. And I want to tell you a quick story that happened to me and Miss Karen, and then I'll let you go, and I'll toss it back to you, and you can move on to somebody else. This happened to Karen and I back about 20 years ago, but the song remains the same. When we lived in a trailer park, insert joke here, I mean, we didn't have a pot to piss in. But the trailer park was probably 3 square miles, and we were visiting a neighbor at a trailer. And on our way home, we got pulled over, and the reason being was I wasn't wearing a seatbelt. Well, why would you wear a seatbelt in a neighborhood where you can't go over 5 miles an hour because there's speed humps everywhere? And then the cop says to Karen, he says, "Miss Jones, there's been a lot of narcotic activity in the area. Do we have consent to search your car?" Well, if you say yes, they ransack your car. If you say no, that gives them probable cause to give a warrant and search anyhow. So it's a classic catch 22.
I know, but you know, good. Go wake up the judge.
Right. And my question to you, and this is where the Fourth Amendment, anybody within the sound of my voice, if this ever happens to them, should we exercise that Fourth Amendment right, especially knowing that you're clean as a whistle, and say, "I would like to exercise my Fourth Amendment right. No, you cannot search my car."
One need not be a lawyer, because I'm not. One need not be a lawyer to tell a person never to waive your rights, because
right.
Nothing good ever comes from it.
My father always said rights are like muscles. If you don't use them, you will lose them.
Yeah. And you know what? It's going to be inconvenient, but you're going to one of two things will happen after you say, "No, I do not consent for you to search." They're either going to say, "Okay, we're going to go get a warrant," and you say, "Well, I'll be right here," and you're going to be horribly inconvenienced. Your day is going to go to hell, and that's all. And you know, hopefully, you won't be beaten or killed.
Right, and with the
or else they will go back and sit in the cruiser for a minute and decide whether or not they want to roust you, because that's all it was in the first place, was a roust.
Right, but most people are scared to death, and they consent, and they will, you know, submit to their car being ransacked. Karen's purse got searched through. I mean, it was just a total inconvenience.
Yeah, and it's not, and it's past an inconvenience, Steve. It feels
right.
Like a violation.
It was a violation, and we felt violated afterwards. So, you know, that's the question, the Fourth Amendment question I wanted to pose to you. And I wanted to take it even a step further. Couldn't you say, "Look, I am late for an important meeting. If there's no reason for you to detain me, I have to go. Are you well within your rights to get in your car and go?"
No.
You can't.
No. Dear God, then you're fleeing.
According to the ACLU's website, you are. So, you know, I'm getting conflicting information here.
Well, again, I'm not a lawyer. I don't hold right. myself out as such. But, you're certainly within your rights to say, "Look, arrest me or let me go."
Right. You know, if I'm not being detained for any reason, then I've got to go.
And if they knock on your door and say, "Can we come in?" The first question you ask is, "Do you have a warrant to do so?" When they say no, then say, "Well, then I politely refuse to allow you entry into my home."
Well, Bob, isn't a car an extension of your house?
No.
No, it is not. Okay. Now, I was been misinformed. I thought that it was.
No, there's a whole different body of law that attaches to searches of automobiles as opposed to searches of homes.
So what you're telling me is they pretty much just carte blanche search your car then, and you just got to lay down and take it.
No, I'm not telling you that.
Oh, okay.
I mean, if they want to start opening trunks and looking in bags and you know, if you're a
searching
traveler,
purses.
Opening suitcases and going through purses and stuff like that, it's warrant time. But the thing is, because it's a car, they can do a search for officer safety.
Oh, God. Well, I mean, where? How open is that?
Way too.
Wow. Wow. Well, thanks, Bob. You've really enlightened me, and that's why I call you, because, you know, educate me.
I don't know. I don't know how much I enlightened, but I mean the Fourth Amendment, such as it is there for a reason, and there's just some stuff that I mean it still exists. Okay. Now, on the other hand, you get things like the doctrine of inevitability. Our search was illegal, but you know we found some stuff. And if we'd gotten the warrant, we would have found it then. So it was inevitable that it would be discovered. And the Supreme Court goes, you know what? You're right. It's okay by us.
Really?
Yeah.
Now no kidding. Now I thought if you exercise your Fourth Amendment right, no matter what they found, if it was an illegal search, it got tossed out the window.
Oh hell no!
That doesn't work like that.
Oh no! As long as they were acting in good faith, or the result of the search was going to be inevitable, or the Supreme Court has made a Swiss cheese of the Fourth Amendment over the course of especially the 20th century.
It's not a free country anymore, is it, Bob?
Kind of depends on how you define it, Steve.
Well, I guess
you're free. You've got 29 different kinds of breakfast cereal you can choose from at the grocery store. How much more free do you want to be?
But when I'm in my car, by God, I better tote straight and narrow. So, wow. You just enlightened me, and you know I appreciate your insight on that because it's something I've been wrestling with.
But if you decide, if he's deciding on whether to get a warrant or whatever, and you decide just to toddle off to your very important meeting, you're fleeing, and then the guns can come out.
Oh boy, then you could end up on the news.
Yeah, David in South Carolina just said, subject line, dead right, and one can drive off and get blown away by the cops for doing it.
No kidding. Well, so to wrap all this up, if you know that you don't, you know, that you're totally within your rights and you don't have any contraband, you can just refuse the search and make them go through the motions just to prove a point.
Yeah. And you know, that's especially useful at 3 o'clock in the morning when you say, go ahead, wake the judge up, get the search warrant, execute the search warrant, find nothing, and then explain to the judge why you did it. Although if you get mouthy like that, your face is liable to run into their maglight flashlight.
Right. Or, you know.
You know, here's the list of things you don't say. Right. I pay your salary. Give me your badge number. I'm going to have your job. Yes, sir. No, sir. Hands plainly in sight. And now they've added to the list because they have a right to, and I don't challenge this right. Are there any weapons in the vehicle? Yes, officer. No, officer. If the answer is yes, officer, don't fucking breathe.
Wow. Well,
they'll say, where are they? You say, under the seat or wherever, and at that point in time, for officer safety, they get to get the gun.
This even reinforces, no matter how bad we hate whoever is on the progressive side, we need to pinch our nose to a bleeds to stack the Supreme Court to avoid this kind of crap.
Well, you're not... Okay, Steve. No. Steve, I love you, but let's get past that real quick.
Okay.
That ain't gonna happen. The guy that Barack Obama has nominated to fill Fat Dead Tony's seat has almost never voted in favor of a criminal defendant complaining about a violation of his Fourth or Fifth Amendment rights. He always finds an excuse for the police.
Well, that's why I pick your brain, Bob, because you're so much further ahead of these things than I am.
And the people, you know, the right wing went crazy in the early 60s over the Warren Court. Well, Earl Warren was not some wild-eyed democratic socialist liberal, okay? He was a Republican governor, for Christ's sakes. But once, but funny things do occasionally happen to Supreme Court justices when you put them up there and you tell them, and they're not just raging asshole ideologues like, you know, Fat Tony or Coke Can Slappy Thomas or Alito or Roberts. If you actually give them the power to look at the Constitution and say, okay, what does it mean? Then there have been occasions where the court and members of the court have started trying to do the right thing. The police hated, Steve, the Miranda decision that said the cops had to actually read somebody their rights and inform them that they did not have to confess.
Well, according to my lawyer, that's a farce anyhow. They don't really have to do it, and so I don't know.
Well, they do it to one degree or another.
Yep.
They'll get the confession and then read you your rights. It's a beautiful thing. Because once you've signed the son of a bitch, you're toast.
So if I'm understanding you correctly, voting progressive for Fourth Amendment rights during this election cycle is a moot point.
It's meaningless. I mean,
you just took a lot of wind out of my sails, Bob.
Well, I'm sorry, but there's not a. Granted, Bill Clinton did appoint Ruth Bader Ginsburg.
Yep.
And it's one of the better things he ever did. But I don't necessarily trust Hillary. I think she'll have a litmus test. I think any Supreme Court appointee nominee from Hillary would have to be pretty rock solid, lead pipe cinch certain on a woman's right to choose.
And it would I think everything
else is in play.
And it would be a far better choice over than anybody on T. Rump's list. Would you agree with that or not?
Oh yeah, I read earlier today where some right wing jackass is saying that if he really wants to nail down the conservative vote, T. Rump needs to promise to nominate Rafaelito and Eduardo Cruz, the anointed booger eating future king of America, to the court.
Well, let's see how this is going to play out. Bob, it was great talking to you. I'm going to toss it back to you, and I really enjoyed our discussion tonight.
Oh, it's always a pleasure, Steve. Give my best to Karen, and clear that whole United Parcel Service thing up real quick before it becomes a problem.
We're good on that.
And say hi to Cletus for me.
And everybody in the chat room, they're good people. And, Bob, I love you, bro. And you take care of yourself, okay?
All right, will do, Steve. Thanks.
All right, take care now.
Bye now. Our buddy Steve from Georgia Stan. By the way, happy birthday wishes going out to our buddy Jenny up in Milwaukee. Happy birthday, Jenny. I hope it's a dandy. Let's keep things going here. I bet you that is Jim down in Louisiana, Stan. Is that you, Jim?
That's me, Bob. How you doing?
Good. You?
Pretty good. Had some fried catfish, a little salad, and some mashed potatoes.
Oh, you know how to hurt a guy.
But you talking about brushes with the law kind of brought up. Believe it or not, I've had a few, and you have your rights and all that, but when you're dealing with the cops, the law enforcement, you're basically, at the minimum, you're going to spend 12, 13 hours in jail before anything gets moving, and then you got to wait. I mean, like I got stopped in, I was walking home, it was, I don't know, 11, 12 o'clock at night. Anyway, I had a phenobarbital on me, which was, I have a prescription for it, but I had it outside of the pill. I just had the pill. And I told them what it was, and I thought everything would be cool, but, and then the next thing I know, he's putting handcuffs on me, and, well, you go to jail. And I go, well, I got a prescription for it. Well, just bring that to court, it just has to do with the inconvenience of being in jail for, 13, 14 hours.
Yeah.
I did, I went to court, and I brought, I made a point of, it would happen, it's weird, because they did, okay, I had a court date, I go, then they don't call the case, and I was like a couple of minutes late, they don't think, oh my God, I missed, they called my case, the first one. I said, no, they didn't call you, so you'll get another letter. So then you go back, then I went back another time. Anyway, long story short, then I got a letter in the mail, the case had been dropped. Okay, they're not going to prosecute. Then, 6 months after that, I get another letter, they reopen the case. So then I had to go down, I went down, they call you, you know, they called me, and I tapped into my lawyer DNA, which kind of runs on my father's side a little bit deep.
And right.
I didn't know what I was going to say, but it was weird, because usually I'd write down, you know, talking points, but it just kicked in. Or I said, you know, I went into the spiel about the brain surgery, and that's why I take the phenobarbital, and for dramatics, I had like four or five empty vials of phenobarbital along with one half full, and I kind of slammed them, not Abby Hoffman slammed them, but just put them on the table. See, I've been taking this for 40 some odd years, and the judge goes, case dismissed. But I mean, and it was weird, because I contacted a lawyer thinking it would be like $1,000 or a couple of hundred just for him to like do that. No, it was like $5,000 to get a lawyer to do that, if I would have wanted a lawyer to do that.
Yeah.
So that price isn't outrageous, huh?
No. No, because as Abraham Lincoln said, a lawyer's time and advice are his stock in trade. It's all he's got.
Yeah, I don't know. Then there's another time I asked the cop for his badge number. That doesn't touch on that. Because when you said, don't, that is rule number one. Never ask an officer.
Well, I mean, it's an implied threat of civil action. And, you know, that just falls under the W.C. Fields command, third commandment, don't smarten up a chump.
Yeah, well, that was like another night I spent.
But, I mean, you know, we talk about all these things, Jim. And, you know, for anybody who thinks that there's not a disparity of treatment between people of color and white folks, Carol Baker reminded me of this. Remember back in the winter? Remember the video of Lavoy Finkham?
Uh-huh.
You know, out there with the Bundy Bird Sanctuary goons, went on the run, tried to run over and kill a cop, gets his truck stuck in a snowbank, runs away from the cops, turns toward the cops, reaches the wrong way for his gun, reaches for his gun again, gets to reach for his gun two or three times before one of the cops goes, enough, and, you know, blows him away. And what were the white people screaming? They murdered poor Lavoy in cold blood.
Yeah.
When in point of fact, he was trying to murder them.
So, I mean, you just got to, for any advice for any horn listeners, and I'm sure most of them are wise to it, you just, and I think your advice is definitely right. You know, just.
I mean, it's not advice. It's not advice in the least. It's just, it's common sense. Don't, you know, there's an old saying out there that you don't get in, you don't start wars with people who buy ink by the barrel. Okay? In other words, don't piss off the local editor, because
right,
he will use the power, the First Amendment power of the press, to work your ass over. Well, by the same token, don't get mouthy with people who have a right to use guns, tasers, gas, blackjacks, handcuffs, and their fists on you, black or white. Now, the tragedy of this country comes, Jim, from the fact that you've got a whole bunch of people of color who aren't getting mouthy, who, in the case of Philando Castile, were simply trying to comply and got killed for it. Remember, The cop was convinced that this guy was a desperate criminal because he had a broad nose.
Yeah, that's just horrific. Goes on, and it seems like, I think the powers that be like it when it kind of gets out of control, because that just gives them more reason. It scares the quote-unquote regular people, and it gives them more reason to clamp down and cut down on whatever remaining freedoms we have.
Well, it's good. It's certainly good for the police business.
Yeah, and you hit the nail on the head. It is nothing but a business. Yeah, I think you were touching on that one Friday. It is nothing but a goddamn business for the most part. You know, especially like, it's not just the little counties that, you know, with the speed traps, but I think it's throughout, and especially since the quote-unquote Reagan Revolution. Okay, well, we need revenue from somewhere. Well, fine.
And it's not just we need revenue from somewhere, Jim. It's we need revenue, and we cannot get it via taxation because we're Republicans and we don't believe in that. I mean, how would people feel if you said to them, look, we're going to raise taxes, and the taxes we raise are going to go to bring you better law enforcement. We're going to start hiring cops with IQs of at least 100.
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And we're not, and you know what? We're not going to ruin your insurance because you got pulled over for 61 and a 55. Now, and you know, none of these things are necessarily easy. For instance, the speed limit goes down to 35 through my little town. It does not need to be 45, and it doesn't need to be 55. It probably could stand to be 25. Because, you know, there are people on the streets, people walking across the street, you know, a little bit of traffic here and there, that kind of thing. The question is that 35-mile-an-hour speed limit a license to extract revenue?
Yes, indeed.
And the mindset is that it is. Whereas, you know, in that case, I think it really is a matter of public safety.
Well, I don't see any way out of this, you know. I mean, some sort of Bernie miracle revolution, which I'm still holding out hope for, but I'm not holding my breath. I don't see this happening. I mean, it would take, the people would have to wake up, and then I've realized, because I've been pondering this between our talks, there's a significant number, if not a majority, of people who like the way things are. They don't really want to, you know, I think there's still a number of people who like it that way. Like it this way. Or I just feel safer about it. Or even if they don't, all they have to do is just let...
Well, think about it. When Congressman Thumbfingers goes home to the district and campaigns on all the law and order bills he's supported, or she, who's that congressman speaking to? They're not speaking to millennials, because it's, I mean, at least my experience back when I was that age was that I wasn't sitting around terrified that somebody was going to come barreling through my damn door. I was too busy living my life, working my ass off. You know what I mean?
Yeah, well,
hello?
I'm on the phone.
Oh, I'm sorry.
So,
yeah, it's a complex situation. I mean, actually, it isn't. But I mean, when you put in dominoes, because it's really weird how all those dominoes just add up. You know, it's kind of like the song "One Thing Leads to Another." And there's a reason why the way things are the way they are. I mean, there's no way you could run to get elected to Congress or something saying, look, we're going to have a much fairer system, but you're going to have to pay more in taxes, or fairer, or even saying the richer people, because even then, people get worried about that whenever you say you're going to raise taxes. You know, I mean, they want their, you know, money for nothing and their chicks for free as far as law enforcement and everything goes, not realizing that somehow that money to pay their salaries and all that and just keep up with the highways. I mean, you see what's going on with the highways all over the country, right?
Well, I mean, depends on what you mean, but yeah. I mean, I'm not all over the country, but...
So...
Yeah, I mean... But they're, you know, they're revenue streams. I mean, especially on limited access highways, our interstate system. I remember being interested in this a lot of years ago. I read a lot of stuff that said there is absolutely no correlation between high speed and danger in terms of driving on the highway. Of course, the other side said that, you know, deaths went down by X percent when we lowered the speed limit from 65 to 55. If that was the case, you would expect the Autobahn in Germany to just be one long string of death. But it ain't. Wow, somebody pissed off the dog outside. He's not even our dog. He just sits by and takes care of us because he's a nice guy. That's Bruno. Yeah. Well, Jim, good talking to you.
All right. Well, I just wanted to throw in my two cents, give my two of my rest stories.
And as the other old radio guy used to say, say hi to Mom and him.
All right. Check you later.
All right. Take care, Jim. Bye now. Our buddy Jim calling from Louisiana stand. Some email to share, to report. From a member of the Fraternity of Steve. Subject line, safety off. One of the oldest truisms of sociology of criminalistics is that the vast majority of murders are due to the personal relationship or acquaintance between perpetrator and victim. I remember being told a very long time ago that the vast majority of shootings takes place at a range of somewhere less than 4 feet. Stands to reason, someone who is contemplating murder needs to have something like the passion to contemplate murder in the first place. Crimes of passion are familiar. The cold-blooded killer is sick or a professional, perhaps both. And that's one of the reasons we differentiate between the two, hot-blooded versus cold-blooded murder. And we punish hot-blooded murder less severely. But it is one thing, Steve continues, to know that such an efficient instrument of death as a cheap handgun is available as a matter of constitutional right, and quite another to encourage and to abet people in the use of such a thing for resolving disputes or expressing, one suspects, a personal opinion. What is the true calculus of easy access and individual action? Since when has the gun in American culture not been an expression of political power, an ideology of free choice? You simply don't need a reason to shoot it out with an enemy, especially when the popular perception has it that anyone at any time in any situation is the enemy. Any stranger these days is probably packing heat. Police most certainly are. The passion nowadays is as automatic as a machine gun. Regards, Steve in China. A whole bunch of true in there. And it's also worth adding into what Steve said, that ours is a newish sort of thing. Oftentimes, when you hear about the latest NRA insanity being pumped through a legislature like a cordite enema, someone will use the phrase, "They're going to turn," fill in the name of the state, "into the Wild West." But that wants for truth. Because the so-called Wild West, as quick as it got wild, people started trying to do something about it. There were entire towns where you had to check your weapon before entering the town limits. For good reason. Because you didn't want people getting liquored up and deciding to start shooting at each other. Because those 19th century Western towns, or any towns for that matter, were severely wanting in the means to deal with it and get out of hand in a real hurry. You know, whether it be the Earp brothers, whether it be Arizona or Kansas, New Mexico or Texas. This is a new phenomenon. And to hearken back to the movie Jaws, this is not a boating accident. I'm unable anymore to view the arming of the United States at the insistence of the National Rifle Association as anything more or anything less than an attempt to drive this country towards civil war, chaos, and a complete breakdown of constitutional governance. And it really does make it, you know, these laws do make a difference. I don't go anywhere now in my state, and my state is a constitutional open carry state. You know, you want to carry your AR-15 over your shoulder to the, because you're too much of a chicken shit to go to Walmart to get a loaf of milk and a jug of bread and something from China. Without it, well, West Virginia's constitution says you can. But in the sliding scale that applies to such things, at least you can see that guy, and if he starts to go sideways, you can run, you can try to hide, you can try to do something. But now, one must presume, and if one is a cop in this state, I am not without sympathy. If you're a private citizen or a police officer, you have to default to the idea that whomever you're dealing with is armed. Because not to do so is a prologue to tragedy. It's sad, it's brutal. And I wish it was not true. But it is. And by the way, since Steve raised the issue of the Fourth Amendment, let's look at one other thing. Guess what all this carry business has done to the Fourth Amendment? Now, Steve and I had a rather extended conversation about what happens when the cop says, are there any guns, and you say yes. Well, at that point in time, for the sake of the safety of the officer, and no court is going to disagree, the officer gets to make sure he or she is safe and does so by disarming you. Which means the police officer has the right to open the door of your vehicle. Because at that time, if you so much as flinch, especially if you're black, as Philando Castile proved, you are likely to die. Okay? So now the police officer gets to open your door, gets to fish around in your car to wherever you tell him the gun is, gets to make sure there's not another gun, or that whoever's with you doesn't have a gun, Also that the police officer can then give you a ticket for going 56 in a 55. And the Fourth Amendment? Well, in many ways, under that circumstance, the Fourth Amendment has just breathed its last. Because let's say there is a mini bottle of Jack Daniels under the seat, half empty. Well, your ass is going to go for a ride now. Because he just happened to discover that in the course of a search that he was performing for the sake of officer safety to get the gun that you told him was under the seat. Dumbass. And, of course, when this happens, it'll happen to white folks. And they'll inevitably they'll be the people who listen to Alex Jones and that's all a reason to take away our guns. But see, if you're white folks, they'll give you your gun back as soon as you're done proving yourself not to be a raging menace to society by going 56 and a 55, and you've paid your fine and your court costs. Sweet, huh? Hey. Let's run over and talk to Todd. Hey, Todd.
Todd. You know what?
What?
We need a big fucking cookout. The whole country needs a big fucking cookout to chill the fuck out.
Only if there's Valium in the fruit punch.
The reason I brought this up. Now, I heard you say, a couple weeks ago, whenever, there is value in having a full set of cast iron cookware. You can have all that fancy shit. Like, I know people who have, the hanging pans. They look nice, on TV and all that. But they're hard to clean.
Steel core, copper exterior for even heat distribution, yes.
Yeah, right. Like, my dad got all clad, I'm like, why did you spend that much money on that? It's like ridiculous. A full set is ridiculous. I'm like, that's like a used car. Are you serious? People do what they want to do with their money. But you can't beat a full set of cast iron cookware. And I'm going somewhere with this. Okay? Because when you get a nice little by little cast iron cookware, you can cook outside with it. You can put it on the grill. You can put it on the stove.
You can do anything but wash it with soap.
There you go, right? And you can actually... You can roast on top of the stove if you know what you're doing. You get a nice lid, a really heavy, a thick bottom. You can roast the whole chicken on the lowest burn. You cut the flame down really low, and you got a whole, like a half a marinated chicken and teriyaki sauce with some onions.
Have you ever made a cobbler in an iron pot?
Yes.
Bad.
And it doesn't stick.
Oh, of course not. It's Hillbilly Teflon.
Oh. See, don't bring that up again. Please. They had to start putting that stuff on clothes, right, stain resistant, because they couldn't figure out what to do with it. They're like, wow, let's put it on clothes so we don't have to dispose of it. But, all right, so back to the cast iron. I'm trying to connect some dots here. Yeah, you just brought up, and I'm not going to take a long time. Somebody else wants to call.
All the time, Todd. All the time you need, or want.
Well, I like to try to connect data points. Okay, so the NRA, they really are. They're just a terrible, terrible organization. Okay, when they started, maybe they had good intentions, but this is in my mind. Maybe this is harebrained, but it seems to me. They figured out how many guns can one person buy? How many guns do you fucking need? Right. A gun by nature of what it is, it's made to hold up. It's a durable good. Otherwise, it'll blow up in your fucking hand. Right.
No, but you gotta take care of it. I mean, pitting and rust and.
But my God, if you got any sense, of course you're going to take care of it and keep it clean. That's the first thing they teach you when you get a firearm. Otherwise it will blow up. But then again, we're dealing with, okay, all right, well. So anyway, what I'm trying to say is that just like a full set of cast iron cookware, you could pass that down to your children. So they have to hype this stuff up so they can sell more guns. You know? And we're in a bad way. We're in a bad state. That's why we need to have a big cookout. You know, if everybody does something nice, like I was thinking about this yesterday, you know, just even strangers, just hold the door for somebody. Do something nice for somebody. Freak people out. Do something nice. You know, that random act of kindness. Remember that?
Yeah.
Remember that was popular for a while. Because you've got these people walking around, like here, these old ladies have guns, man. I can tell who has them too. And they can shoot me dead. All I have to do is say, oh, scary black guy. You know, I felt frightened. And I can be shot dead. And they'll get away with it. You know? And we can do better than this. I'm hoping this is the pimple. We're about to burst this pimple and our skin will heal. What do you think?
Well, I thought you were going to go somewhere completely differently, Todd. I thought you were going to move over into iron cookware as home defense.
Well, that's another option with it, isn't it?
Because I confess to in the past having played a game called Left 4 Dead, which is incredibly violent, but a hell of a lot of fun as long as one can separate reality from fantasy. And you know, there are guns in that game. There are also baseball bats and chainsaws and, yes, iron skillets. And I got to tell you, if you're playing Left 4 Dead and you're killing zombies, they did a great job because the iron skillet makes a beautiful clank when you whack a zombie with it.
Is that a video game?
Yes.
Okay.
Are you a gamer?
I'm not. You know what? I have to confess I am. I'm addicted to a couple of them.
Wait a minute, and you've never played Left 4 Dead?
No, I'm shooting zombies right now with Killshot.
Oh, no. You have not lived until you've played Left 4 Dead. With boomers and smokers and... Oh! Tanks? You don't want to see a tank.
Are you serious? Now I've got to worry about another game. See, when we were growing up, man, it cost a quarter.
Well, this thing's 4 or 5 years old, and you haven't played it?
No, I had.
It's first person, so it's just your hands out front. I'm going to get emails. I can't believe you play that violent stuff. It's a release. And it doesn't make me want to go after anybody with a skillet, because those things really are dangerous. I've got, and you were talking about you can pass it down through the generations. That's my iron, okay? All of my iron is somewhere around 100 years old.
Mm-mm.
Yes, sir.
Wow.
And I've got an iron griddle. You know, it doesn't have sides. It's just, you know, it's good for, you know, grilling sandwiches and making pancakes and that kind of stuff.
Right.
But it's flat, and as compared to a big old skillet, it's a little less heavy. And it's a dandy.
No, I have one, and it's double-sided. It has grooves on one side to get the grill mark.
I've got the grilling pan, but that thing weighs a ton.
Aren't they marvelous though?
I've got an over 100-year-old iron tea kettle.
No way, with the funny spout on it.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, that you used on a wood or coal-fired stove. I've got an iron Dutch oven for the aforementioned cobbler, not to mention the not aforementioned gumbos, stews, roasting, you know, that kind of stuff.
That is magic. See, that was the last piece I bought. I got it before I moved from Macy's. Macy's, when they have a sale, you cannot beat Macy's. Like, if you get a coupon, it'll be like double off, and then they'll take more off. Red dot sale. Blah, blah, blah.
They're giving you money to take the iron out.
You know, but the Dutch oven, that's what I'm talking about, man. You learn how to, cook. You can bake, and it's like in the summertime, instead of heating up the oven, you can cook on top of the stove with a heavy lid, a heavy pan, and heavy lid.
Oh, never mind that. A cobbler bake in wood in wood fired coals, and take a little dough and use it to seal the lid on the Dutch oven.
Oh man!
And then just
I would eat that when it's done.
Oh, yeah. Peach and the black, like I said, the blackberries are ripe right now.
Wow.
It'll be time to go down to the Bendigali and wrestle with the Bears for the raspberries pretty soon. The Bears win, but I give them a good fight. But no, I get your point. I mean, we need a national day of chill them out.
You know.
But the thing is, I don't know that it's the government. You know, I'm not that way that wants us not to. But you know what? The Blue Lives Matter people don't want to chill out with the Black Lives Matter people, and it's like Carol Baker said a little bit ago. The whole country needs a blunt.
Well, that would solve a whole lot of things, now, wouldn't it? You know, I smoked cigarettes for 18 years, and I loved every minute of it. When I smoked, I loved it. My first cigarette was a Camel non-filter. And then I went to drum. I don't know if you ever heard of drum.
Oh, yes. Yeah, I rolled a little it's drum in my day.
Okay, so you know what I'm talking about, right? But, you know, every time you go to sleep, no matter what your vice is, you quit. And if anybody thinks you can't quit something, remember, every time you go to sleep, well, I mean, you could be all drunk up, but basically at that point you're processing the alcohol. You're not really intaking. But if you think you can't stop something, just remember, every time you go to sleep, you can quit. Because you stop when you go to sleep. But, you know, this Blue Lives Matter, it makes me bristle. Because that
well, you should, Todd, because it's getting frightening. Louisiana made a crime. Louisiana, the legislature there passed, and John Bel Edwards, the Democratic governor, signed into law a statute that now says that any attack on a police officer shall automatically be deemed a hate crime. And there are statutes like that proliferating like toadstools after a spring rain all over this country. Now, if you want the most surefire route to a police state, that's it. I mean, there's standing Supreme Court law out there that says that police, by virtue of the position that they occupy, have got to have a little bit more thick skin than the average citizen. You've got to be able to stand there and get called unpleasant names and still not kill or beat anybody. But that is quickly going away.
Well, this new ruling, I don't know if you already touched on that tonight. All right. You know the new Supreme Court ruling where basically they can just stop you on the street.
Yeah, we've talked about it in the past, yeah.
Yeah, okay. It's frightening. I mean, I don't know what they were thinking about. They're too insulated. See? That
they're not insulated. They believe that.
Well, that's crazy.
I mean, that case was hand in hand with the 9-0 decision, you know, the sweet Granny McCluckin decision that said, you know, in which a unanimous Supreme Court with a 250-foot buffer zone said that it was unconstitutional for a woman going to Planned Parenthood for a pap smear to have a 20-foot buffer zone between her and the crazy old Catholic lady with the picture of the dead fetus up in her face.
Yeah. Well, see, I've said this before, but honest to God, do they really think that women, they must, in their mind, they must think that women have, like, abortion parties. Like, oh, girl, come on, I'm getting an abortion tomorrow. Let's go get drunk.
You want to get one, too?
You know, what is wrong with these people? That's a hell of a decision. I mean, I've been there. I've been a party to that. That's no easy decision, okay? For anybody. And for them to trivialize it, I'm drinking black toad. What a mess. But yes, that's the creep. That's the police state creep. And I don't know, man. It's fit into the fascist frame of mind.
Well, and there are people. This country has always had a taste. There's always been a segment of this country that's had a taste for fascism, Todd. Okay, plain and simple. And we ignore that at our peril. So why should we be surprised that there are people who are trying to drive us in that direction? Fascism is on the march all across the globe. And you know what? They may have learned, the scary part is they may have learned some lessons this time through. And they may get away with it. Because they're not going to get all ham-fisted and heavy-handed like that gang of thugs did 70, 80 years ago.
Well, they better get some good barbecue and a cold or smoke.
I'm really in a bad place because that last five racks of ribs that I did pretty much put paid to what was left of the old smoker. So I'm smokerless at this point in time.
Oh man, I'm sorry to hear that.
Yeah, well, I mean, she went out in style. I mean, there was cherry wood involved, there was pecan wood involved, there was hickory and apple.
Oh,
and I mean, they were good. They were real good.
Did you put a dry rub on it before you put it in?
Oh, Todd, dadgum, dry rub. All right.
That's what I'm talking about.
Now, wait, dry rub, 6 hour rest.
Oh, no.
And then wrapped in cheesecloth and submerged in an apple juice cider vinegar with a little bit of this and that in it, and another 6 hours.
Holy cow. That's illegal, man. You're all on the indica now. Man, come on.
Pulled it out of that, had the fire down to coals, threw the cherry on, put the racks on, painted them with another marinade over top of the cheesecloth. And
the cheesecloth to hold it together and make it retain the shape and just hold everything in there.
Well, not just that, but to keep any acridity from the smoke. I mean, that way the cheesecloth gets blacked if anything gets too hot, but the meat doesn't.
I've not done that before, but that makes sense. Okay.
And then the marinade, and just mopped with the marinade throughout the smoking process, and then finished it over, and then took it where we were going and finished it over charcoal with a couple of different store-bought sauces because I'm ashamed of myself. But I didn't have time to make sauce.
Oh, my God.
But it was pretty respectable.
Good grief.
I chose two different sauces, neither of which had any high fructose corn syrup in it. One was mustard-based, one was tomato-based.
Damn. I hope Tracy's listening.
Tracy had her leg procedure today, so she may be out of it right now. She got the other leg done.
Okay. I was in Lowe's looking around, and I saw does she have that char griller, that brand?
Yeah, with the dual?
Yes.
Yeah,
That's a moneymaker. I could make a fortune with that if I had that. I mean, not a fortune, but that's amazing.
There's the Oklahoma Joe's, which seems to be really good, heavy gauge steel, with an offset side firebox.
Mm-hmm.
And then Char Griller has come out with their version. It's a slightly less expensive version of the Big Green Egg.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's the electric smoker, which feels like cheating. You can run it with your smartphone app.
What?
Yeah, I know. I mean, it's electric, and you just put your meat in there, and you set it to 200 degrees, and you throw some sopping wet chips in the little chip pan, and the next thing you know, barbecue.
If you could see my face, I got the screw face. You know, my face is scrunched up. I'm like, what?
Yeah, that, no. See, I, there might be some convenience to it, but where's the joy?
No,
I mean, if I'm not fussing over the smoker, you know, well, what's the point?
Someone was kind enough this weekend to donate the. Apparently, it's the char griller smoker side thing. It looks like a little pig. Okay.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, and it goes on there. It goes on their charcoal grill, and it sets up as an offset. I looked at that. But you've got to hammer out a big hunk of steel, or drill it out, or whatever, and they ain't gonna happen. Not with me.
Well, I'm using it. Someone donated it to us, and I have. It's just freestanding, okay? Because you can do it two ways.
You can use it as a freestanding, like, you know, tabletop affair.
Right, and I, you know, I accepted it because I lifted it up. I was like, oh, if I take care of this, it might last. You know, because it's heavy.
Yeah.
And it's steel, it's got a drawer, and it's got the grates. But, you know, and it's good when there's just a couple people around. But you can still fit probably 12 burgers in there at once, maybe.
Yeah, you know what? I started looking at the stats on the Big Green Egg.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. For starters, the biggest one is $2,000.
That's the one we had 4th of July. But it's generational.
And you can do 24 racks of ribs vertically on the son of a gun.
No, that's not the one we had. No.
It will do 2 turkeys at once. And once upon a time, I threw bashes that big. I don't do that anymore. But damn!
But the thing is, it's so efficient. It's so efficient with the fire. You know, it's amazing how long. Like, I call it the Genghis Khan because I can imagine. You know, it looks like something Chinese to me. I don't know. It looks like a Mongol. And you know, you get the chunks of the oak and you put it in there. That thing burns a long time.
Oh yeah, and if you get ambitious, for like $160. At your local big box house supply, Home Lowe's Depot thing, you can get the mate to that thing. And if you look on the side of it, you'll see that there's a piece of metal, and it looks roughly like the outline of an eye.
Mm-hmm.
And you get the other one, and you punch out both of those. They bolt together, and you've got a side firebox smoker that you can do a pig in.
Wow. Holy cow. Well, you know, they're big on pigs here. There's pigs all over.
With good reason, you know. Yum.
Well, and, it's almost... Listen, what was the most irritating story that you saw today in the news? Because I was out of the loop today.
It's more in Monday, so, and we didn't get to all of them. The most irritating ones are the ones that arise out of white folks explaining why Black Lives Matter are terrorists. Because the level of cluelessness is you know, well past 11.
Okay, that's what I was going to see. That we're in a bad place, man. They just don't get it.
And I didn't even get to the. What was her name? We had an idiot clip from her last week, I think. She works for Glenn Beck. What's her name? Tommy Lauren. She's this pretty, pretty, beautiful, bleach blonde, perfect, who, you know, bloviates over on the Blaze and insists on calling Black Lives Matter the new KKK.
Oh, well, she has the brain of a thimble. That's ridiculous. You know,
but she's not out there to inform the public. She's out there to engage in confirmation bias for a very well-defined demographic that they know they're talking to. They don't care if this country descends into absolute chaos as long as they're selling advertising. And it'll never touch her because she walks around in a damn force field of white privilege. And not just white privilege, but beauty privilege.
Well, yeah, you know, and I'm going to say this. I'm halfway done. I'm halfway through my life. And I think I've been around. I've had all different types of female friends. And, it's interesting. For some reason, a lot of white guys, a blonde woman can be, you know, physically as ugly as a tar pit. But, oh, she's blonde. And, you know, I'm like, well, but she doesn't.
That's why more blonde hair dye is sold than any other color.
But so I don't get it. I mean, I've had, you know, whatever. But so what? You know, it's about. I mean, after you get your nut, what are you going to talk about?
Well, but in her case, there's always going to be something to talk about because there's always going to be some level of white aggrievement, you know.
I know, and the white males are so persecuted and they're so downtrodden. It's a shame, you know. Well, anyway.
I know. Hey, Todd, it is. You know what? We're going to have that barbecue someday, because I want to sit by the smoker, and just throw chunks of wet pecan wood into the firebox with you.
I could smell it.
All right, Todd, you be good, man. Thanks for the call.
All right, brother.
Later. Bye now. Our buddy Todd. And, you know, I really do. I appreciate Todd kind of evening out the outrage at the end of the evening. It makes it, well, take some of the sting out. Thank you, Todd. And thank you to Charlie. And thank you to Cletus. I am proud to announce that we have only $215 more to go in fundraising to get us to Wednesday. And again, program note, no program tomorrow evening, because I'm going to be at the informal conference about the screwing of the people of the coal, the continued screwing of the people of the Coal River Valley. Thanks to everybody who makes all of this go. Thank you to all of you who contribute to keep it going, and thanks to all of you who listen, share your thoughts in every way. Thank you, one and all. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Good night, y'all.